Copyright notice. The contents of this podcast, including intro music, are copyright Phantom Femme. The podcast artwork is copyright Isabeau of WAGProductions.org. This labyrinth, the Phantom of the Opera, in Eric's times, and ours. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to In This Labyrinth. We are on episode 6, which is awesome. We are chewing right along here. And first of all, as always, huge thanks to everyone who has listened to the first 5 episodes and a bit. And huge thanks to all the new people who have joined in episode 5, who joined in for the past episode, and who, hopefully, are tuning back in for this episode 6. And of course, huge thanks to all those who've been listening from the beginning and who are tuning back in for episode 6 as well. Thanks to all the new people, and thanks to all the people who are hanging in. It is super cool to watch my download stats grow, and you all out there are what make that happen. So thanks hugely, very much. I'm glad you're enjoying it, and hopefully you will enjoy this episode too. Now, sadly, as I mentioned at the end of last episode, I had hoped to have an interview lined up for this episode, and unfortunately that didn't end up happening. It just, everyone's schedules were just too busy and we weren't able to coordinate it. So, alas, that is not what I'm going to have for you today. Bummer, sorry about that. But, as we say, these things do happen. Now, hopefully it will happen in the future. We both really want to do the interview and are both really excited about it. We're just not sure exactly when we're going to be able to do it. So stay tuned here and on the Facebook page, which is the name of the podcast, In This Labyrinth, The Phantom of the Opera in Eric's Times and Ours, and or on my Twitter at ITL Podcast, and I will definitely let you all know when that's going to happen. Sadly, just because of both of our schedules, his with work and organizing and mine with school, that may not happen until the new year, but it will definitely happen. We, as I said, we're both very excited about doing this interview and really want to do it. We just may not be able to until the new year. So, yeah, definitely stay tuned here and on Facebook and Twitter, and I will make sure and announce that when we finally get that arranged. Even though I don't have the interview, though, I still wanted to go ahead and put an episode out, both to keep more or less somewhat on schedule, but also I really wanted to do an episode leading up to and in honor of Disability Pride, which in Toronto, where I am, is today, Saturday, September 22nd, 2018. I will, of course, be at Toronto Disability Pride this afternoon. I'll be at the rally in March. I'm not on the formal program or anything, but I'll definitely be there marching and rallying with everybody else. And I may even try to do a Facebook Live from the event, from the rally in March, either on my own Facebook page, Phantom Femme, or on the Facebook page for this podcast. And for those in Toronto, I'll put a link to the Toronto Disability Pride page with the time and location and all that on the podcast Facebook page, and I'll also put it on my Twitter, the podcast Twitter, so folks can find out all about it and hopefully come out. And you can also find out more about it by following the hashtags TDPM, Disability Pride, or I think it's either Toronto Disability Pride or Disability Pride Toronto on Twitter, too. And it's going to be a really great day, it sounds like. For one thing, the weather is going to cooperate with us. It's going to be much cooler on Saturday than it has been lately. Thank God for that, because there's just marching and rallying out in like 30 plus degree heat is just nasty. And then it sounds like they've got a really great lineup of speakers and presenters. So that's going to be really exciting. So, as I said, I wanted to put out an episode leading up to and in honor of Disability Pride, because, as I've alluded to a number of times in previous episodes, my fanship, my love of Phantom, is and always has been intimately and inextricably bound up in my experience as a disabled person. And Phantom, in fact, my love of Phantom, really played a critical role in the formation of my disabled identity and also of my disabled politics. So, in honor of Disability Pride, I wanted to take some time to talk in a bit more depth about that. Now, I should say, first off, I'm very much speaking from my own experience here. Obviously, I very much doubt that I'm the only fan for whom Phantom is tied up with their experience of disability. But at the same time, you know, your experience of that is going to be different from mine. So I'm going to be very much speaking here from my own experience. And of course, I would very much love to hear from listeners and fellow fans whether you've had similar or very different experiences of how Phantom relates to or is tied in with your experience of disability or as disabled people or however you identify. So, I guess the best way to put it is that for me, Phantom was my first experience of disability as a political category, as a political phenomena, rather than as a medical one. Now, I obviously could not have articulated it that way at the time, but when I first became a fan, or as I like to say, when the Phantom first found me, I very strongly and immediately identified with the Phantom, even though on the surface of it, his issues are different than mine. I experienced low vision and CP and other such, and he experienced having a facial deformity. But in spite of those seeming differences between me and the Phantom, I immediately resonated with and related to, and very powerfully and strongly resonated with and related to, the Phantom as someone whose bodily difference, whose difference of a bodily appearance, shocked and freaked out those who consider themselves normal. And I also really resonated with and loved the idea that to love the Phantom, to desire the Phantom, although I wouldn't have put it that way at the time, but to love the Phantom, you had to reject being normal. You had to be willing to say to hell with what normalcy says you should want and should be. As I mentioned last episode when talking about what I get out of the title song, and I will come back to that later. But right from the beginning of my fanship, this idea of embracing the freak, embracing and loving the one whom society has labeled a monster, and having to say to hell with normalcy to do it, became very central to my fanship and to my politics. Or rather, to the politics that developed out of my fanship. And it's interesting because before Phantom, although I'd always considered myself a proud nonconformist, I hadn't really connected that with my disability. Or at least I hadn't consciously connected it with my disability. There was sort of my disability over here with all its medical and educational interventions. And then over there was all the ways I saw myself as a proud nonconformist, which largely had to do with gender, preferring toys, swords, and adventure stories over Barbie dolls, which, especially back in the days when I wore my hair short, tended to get me read as a tomboy, which I hated because I did not identify that way myself. And then also being a nerd, although I didn't know that word yet then, but let's just say my favorite book in grades 1 and 2 was Lord of the Rings. And I was the kid who admitted listening to classical music and didn't admit to listening to rock and roll, even though I did, but like privately at home on the radio. And then, of course, even back then, I was the kid who loved strong, powerful characters in black capes, which tended to mean that my favorite characters tended to be the villains. Not because they were the villains, not because they were evil, but because they were strong and charismatic in ways that the good guys almost never are, and of course, because they were the ones that usually got to wear the black capes. And these weirdnesses didn't really draw flack from my peers, like from other kids, although they did make it hard to find people with whom I was really fully on the same page. But when I was teased and bullied by other kids, it tended to be for my glasses or for my weird way of speaking and walking because of the CP, not for those things. Those things, the quote-unquote tomboyishness, the being a nerd, and the love of characters that tended to be villains, interestingly enough, actually tended to bring down flack on my mom from friends' parents and from my teachers who worried that I wasn't quote-unquote age-appropriate and quote-unquote gender-appropriate. And so I was very much aware that there was this thing called normal that I didn't fit. But I understood normal to be about basically behavioral conformism and stifling your imagination, what J.K. Rowling would later call being a muggle. But as I said, before Phantom, I didn't consciously connect it to being disabled, to living in a disabled body. But Phantom really helped me connect those dots, because I saw or I read in the Phantom someone whose bodily difference frightened people, whose bodily difference shocked and freaked people out, and who was labeled a freak and a monster by society, by quote-unquote normal people, and who had become exactly the kind of character I loved, a really super charismatic guy in a black cape, except not a villain, in order to fight back. And to boot, part of his being that awesome charismatic character in a black cape, except not a villain, was music. And that really resonated with me because although I never got particularly good at any particular instrument, I was always a major music junkie. I've been listening to various kinds and styles of music since literally before I could walk. And so that really helped me connect my other ways of being different to disability in ways that I hadn't before, and to see the whole thing as an act of resistance in ways that I had not before. And I have to say that I think my mom and my godmother have to get enormous credit for that, because I think that they were the ones that first introduced me to Phantom, and I think that the way they presented Phantom to me had a lot to do with why and how it helped me make those connections. As I mentioned last episode, my introduction to Phantom was the title song from the Lloyd Webber stage musical, and I first heard that song at my godmother's house when Mom and I were visiting for the weekend. I think it was Easter, because I remember going back to school afterwards, back in 1990 when I was 10. And I'm pretty sure Mom had not yet seen Phantom, and I don't know if my godmother had yet. Anyway, I don't know how it came up, but that weekend she played me parts of the original London cast recording, including the title song. And I was intrigued. The music and the words really caught my attention. And when I asked her what it was about, what the song was about, my godmother explained it to me as, quote, "the moment when Christine has almost gone over to the Phantom and her boyfriend is trying to call her back," unquote. Now, I realize that that's not entirely accurate. As I said, I'm not sure if my godmother had seen Phantom yet or not, or how much she knew about the stage musical or the story, but that was how she explained the title song to me. And that really intrigued me and caught my attention. And where my brain went right away was, well, what's wrong with her going over to the Phantom? Why shouldn't she go over to the Phantom? Now, I had no clear idea at that point of what going over to the Phantom even meant. But looking back on it, I think I recognized in the idea of the boyfriend trying to call Christine back, and in Mom's and my godmother's seemingly automatic assumption that that was a good thing, that she needed to be called back, that she needed to be stopped from going over to the Phantom, whatever that meant, what I would now call the voice of normativity, the same voice of normativity that had people fretting at Mom that I was age and gender inappropriate for being the way I was and liking the things that I liked. And then Mom explained to me about how the Phantom's face was severely disfigured and how that frightened Christine. And so I think, looking back on it now, that those two explanations, given together the way they were, really helped me connect in my mind, really helped my brain connect the fear of the Phantom's face with quote-unquote normals, quote-unquote fear of other kinds of difference, and thus to help me connect my disability, my disabled experience, with my other ways of being different, although I could not have articulated any of that at the time. And I should say that although Phantom helped me connect my experience of being othered for disability, as I would say it now, with that of being othered for being a nerd, it didn't yet help me connect all that with gender. That would come later. That would come a lot later, because gender got a lot more complicated. Connecting Phantom and disability and gender got a lot more complicated because the Phantom was a male character and I was a girl, or I understood myself as a girl at that time. And so that made me kind of feel like I had to be Christine, the Phantom's love object, even though I very strongly identified with the Phantom. And I'm going to do a whole other episode on that at some point, because, as I said, that got extremely complicated and took many years to find the critical tools to work through and to work my way out of, or maybe work my way into. I'm thinking I might do an episode on that in the new year around International Women's Day. But anyway, yeah, that first introduction into fanship really helped me connect my experience of being othered for my physical disabilities with my experience of being othered for what I would now understand and describe as being neuro-non-typical, and to recognize both those otherings, both those oppressions, as coming from the same place, i.e. from this thing called normal. I didn't know the word ableism at the time, and wouldn't for many years, but Phantom helped me recognize it, even though I didn't yet have a word for it. And then later on, as I got to know the musical and the original novel, I also really resonated with the Phantom's struggle for dignity through his music and his persona of the Phantom and his creation of his beautiful lair, and through his seeking to win Christine's love. And that really encouraged and helped me to frame my own creativity and my own aspirations as a resistance to the ableism that I still didn't have a word for, but that I could observe around me very much trying to deny me and other blind and disabled people the right to dreams and aspirations and dignity. And that, again, is something I'll definitely unpack more in future episodes. And then, too, honestly, I have to say that I really appreciated the Phantom's anger, because disabled people, and I would be interested to know if this is true for people with facial differences slash disfigurements slash deformities as well, disabled people are often both portrayed as in literature and media, and are often expected to be kind of Pollyanna, making the best of it, plucky, happy, cheerful, accepting our situation with a good grace and a smile. And we're often portrayed as and expected to be grateful for whatever accommodations we're given, even if they aren't even remotely adequate to our needs. And that's bullshit, but that's the classic cultural stereotype of the cheerful, courageous, disabled person. But of course, the Phantom is not that. He is pissed as hell at the way the world has treated him, and he lets the world know it. And that felt to me then, and still feels to me today, like a really powerful bit of truth-telling. And it felt to me then, although I couldn't have articulated it this way at the time, and still feels to me now, like a powerful political truth-telling, because it calls out the ableism and the injustice of the way the Phantom and people like the Phantom were and are treated, and refuses to put a smiley face on the status quo. And that, too, became a really important part of my fanship and my emerging disability politics. And then lastly, but not really lastly, because there's always more to unpack, Phantom, for me at least, opened up space and continues to open up space to play around with and explore the combinations of fear and desire triggered by disabled and disfigured bodies. And that, again, is definitely something I will explore in more depth in future episodes. But Phantom, I have to say, it departs from a lot of disability politics in that it assumes that one's reaction to a disabled or disfigured body, if you're a quote-unquote normal person, may well be fear or even revulsion initially. Phantom treats those as visceral reactions that may not simply be able to be deconstructed away. But where Phantom becomes radical, to my reading at least, is that it argues that normal, normative society encourages us to give in to those visceral reactions to different bodies and to let those reactions be our excuse for othering and discriminating against and marginalizing people and oppressing people. Whereas if we want to break out of and break the power of normativity, then what we have to do is to struggle through those initial visceral reactions to where we can perceive and embrace the full humanity of a person, or of a group for that matter. Now, I realize that that is heresy in a lot of the disability politics world. Nevertheless, that is very much the political message I've always heard in Phantom. The political and moral message. But related to that message, and again, I don't to this day know quite how exactly I get this out of Phantom. I couldn't point to any specific aspect of any particular version of the story as being where I get this from. But as I said, I've always felt that Phantom offered the idea that one of the ways to work through those initial visceral reactions of fear and revulsion, certainly not the only way, but definitely a way, is to eroticize them and to make them part of desire and play with them as part of desire. And that aspect, that element of desire that plays with and plays around fear of the deformity, has always been a huge part for me of what makes Phantom, especially the Lloyd Webber stage musical, so powerful. Because I feel like that, or at least the potential for it, is there in the Lloyd Webber stage musical in a way that I don't find it to be in the original novel, Sorry LaRue Purists, or in other versions. But yeah, that's always been a huge part of Phantom's power for me, even though back when I first became a fan, I couldn't have articulated it any more than I could have articulated how Phantom helped me recognize and resist ableism, except through the symbolic language of Phantom itself. Again, especially the Lloyd Webber musical. Like with that, it would take me many more years to develop the necessary conceptual and political vocabulary. And yes, all that too will definitely be fodder for future episodes. So, I hope you've enjoyed my sharing with you some of the ways that Phantom and being a fan shaped my disability identity and my disability politics as they formed. And again, as I said at the beginning, I'm very much speaking from my own experience. I realize, absolutely, that other people's experience of how Phantom relates to their disabled identity, or however you identify, may well be very different. Still, I hope what I said gave folks at least some stuff to think about. As always, you can tweet at the show at ITL Podcast. And of course, you can follow the show on Twitter at ITL Podcast as well. You can also like and or follow the show on Facebook and, or hopefully and, join the Facebook group for the show. Both the Facebook page and the Facebook group are just the title of this podcast, In This Labyrinth, The Phantom of the Opera in Eric's Times and Ours. And the Facebook group has a link to it on the Facebook page. And the Facebook page has a link to it on the podcast website, which is at https://inthislabyrinth.fireside.fm. And of course, you can send an old-fashioned, LOL, email to inthislabyrinth@yahoo.com. And last but not least, you can now also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play. And for those subscribing on iTunes, I would be ever so obliged if you would be so kind as to leave a rate and review. That would be absolutely awesome because, A, I always love to hear folks' feedback on the show, and B, that will help the podcast become more searchable and help more folks find it and help the show grow. So thanks in advance. That would be really super. So I hope you all have enjoyed this sixth episode of In This Labyrinth. I don't know exactly when the next episode will be out. The schedule's kind of gotten shot all to hell by the start of the school year. I'm really sorry about that, by the way. I know it's a real pain. It is to me, too. I'm going to try, though, to keep to the more or less bi-weekly schedule. I don't want to go down to once a month, because that just feels too long for you guys to wait between episodes. I know that would drive me nuts if I were listening. But yeah, because of the combination of my own schoolwork, plus my teaching assistantship, the bi-weekly schedule may be rather loosely bi-weekly, and yeah, I apologize if things get a bit erratic. The mythical work-life balance that I'm beginning to think is an urban legend. Anyway, I'm hoping to have the next episode out in early October. And I hope you'll all stay tuned and tune back in for that, because in the next episode, I'm going to be talking about obsession. So that should be really fun. I'm really looking forward to that. In the meantime, though, happy Disability Pride, everybody. I hope to see lots of folks out at the rally in March. And have a great and phantom-filled time until next episode. Disclaimer: the opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the presenters and do not reflect the views of the host, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Cameron McIntosh, the Really Useful Group, or any other person or entity. In addition, this podcast is not in any way affiliated with Andrew Lloyd Webber, the Really Useful Group, Cameron McIntosh, or with any other person or entity involved in the production of any version of Phantom.